Hare Krishna. Nice to see you all again. So today we're finishing our studies of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore we're looking at chapter 10. And there is a small section of chapter 9 which we will look at as well, which gives a description of the spiritual world, a description of Vaikuntha Loka. Okay, so we left off in the previous chapter Sukadeva Goswami had described the conversation between Brahma and Narada, and in that conversation it was revealed that Lord Narayan spoke the Chatur Sloki, or the four seed slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam to Lord Brahma. Now this verse here, of course, we discussed the Chatur Sloki Bhagavatam in terms of Sambandha, Abhidaya and Prayojana. We looked at various statements in relationship to the Chatur Sloki which are relevant for preaching, and looking at Srila Prabhupada's mood and mission. We spent a lot of time on that, understanding the questions by Lord Brahma, wanting to know about the forms of the Lord, the various energies of the Lord, how the Lord utilizes his various energies, and how Lord Brahma, having a proper understanding of the Supreme Lord and his energies, can actually have a proper relationship with the Supreme Lord, and having a proper relationship and understanding the Supreme Lord can utilize, under the direction of the Lord, the Lord's own energies to create the sub-creation or secondary creation of the material universe. So these were Brahma's questions, and the Lord answered those questions by explaining the four seed verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that actually Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the one absolute truth. Therefore, before the creation, he is completely transcendental, and therefore existed before creation. And he is the cause of creation, maintenance and destruction of the material universes, and is the absolute reality. Anything which appears not to be related to the Supreme Lord or his energies, in fact is illusion. And therefore one should actually see everything in relationship with the Supreme Lord, who therefore exists within and without of everything. And one who develops a loving relationship with the Supreme Lord can always have this transcendental vision, and one who has that transcendental vision can certainly execute their activities within this world in such a way that they will fully satisfy themselves and the Supreme Lord and go back to the spiritual world. So that is the essential understanding of the Chatur Sloki, and the Lord spoke to Lord Brahma assuring him that if he, you know, kept this transcendental understanding within his heart and acted accordingly, that even though he was situated in the material body in the material world, he would not actually be bewildered by the material energy, and therefore conditioned and experience suffering as a result. That information was spoken to by Brahma to Narada, and he asked Narada Muni to expand that information of the Srimad Bhagavatam for mankind, because the same transcendental instructions are actually relevant for every living entity. And Brigit Maharaj then asked Sukadeva Goswami, well, in what way did Narada Muni expand this information? And therefore it takes us into this 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where we see that when Sukadeva Goswami speaks the Srimad Bhagavatam, in effect he expands those four chapter sloki into 10 different subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which we will discuss today. Alright, let's perhaps we can write these up on the board. Who would like to do that? Someone like to. Now, do you have your, in your student handbook, do you have a list? What have you got in the way of the 10 topics of Srimad Bhagavatam? Not there. Okay, not in that section. Okay. Right, so we're going to write up the 10 different subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Sanskrit. So the Sanskrit word, and just 1 to 2 words of their essential meaning. Okay. Let's sit there. We can have 2 scribes here. Do you want to admit? You take one side and he can take another side. You do that so we get it done quicker. So you do the second 5 on this side and you do 5 on that side. Is that? Shall we get it? Yeah? Is it on?
No.
It's on the back. No?
It's not connected to power.
Okay, you just have to do them down there. Alright. Oh. Is this power here?
The power is powered.
Does this have a cord? Don't mind. You just write the 10. You hold that for him. That's okay. No, just do it there. Okay. Let's read. Someone like to read the first and second verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, the first verse, of course, of this 10th canto is a key memory verse. Would you like to read that one? You got your... Oh, you got that one. Okay. All right. Who'd like to read that? Sanskrit and the translation.
Sri Shukavacha Astra Sargo Visarkashanam Poshanam Utayaha Mandantara Ishanikatha Nirvatha Mukirashayaha. The translation, Sri Shukadev Goswami said, in the Srimad Bhagavatam there are 10 divisions of statements regarding the following: the creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of Manus, the science of God, returning home, back to Godhead, liberation, and the Samambhana.
Yes. And the second verse, someone else like to read the second verse, nice loud voice.
Dasa Masya Masya Visudu Artham Nava Navanam Ita Lakshanam Varnayanti Mahatmanaha Sruti Nartena Chanchasa. Translation. To isolate the transcendence of the Samam Bonam, the symptoms of the rest are described sometimes by Vedic inference, sometimes by direct explanation, and sometimes by summary explanations given by the great sages.
Yes. Okay. So, in the first verse, Shukadeva Goswami gives 10 subject matters or 10 topics which are discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They are the creation of the universe, sub-creation, planetary systems, protection by the Lord, the creative impetus, the change of Manus, the science of God, returning back home, back to Godhead, liberation, and the Samam Bonam. So they're the 10. Right, now the last one you notice is the Samam Bonam, and the second verse describes that to isolate the transcendence of the Samam Bonam. In other words, to understand that 10th topic is independent from all the others and the shelter of all the others, the rest are described. Sometimes by Vedic inference, the different Vedic statements. Sometimes by direct explanation. Sometimes by summary explanation given by the sages. Now, the next verses, as Prabhupada mentions, there are 7 continuous verses which discuss the 10 divisional symptoms of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Thank you. Now, there are some important quotes from your Book of Prabhupada quotes. We see that there's an explanation of the difference between Ashraya and the Ashrita. There's a quote from the purport, actually, of the Adi Lila, chapter 2, verses 91-92, that two different principles are to be considered herein: the Ashraya, the object providing shelter, and Ashrita, the dependence requiring shelter. So the first nine categories, Prabhupada describes here, the first nine categories described in the first nine cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, are all ashrita. And then, now, part of that purport also explains the part of this statement in verse 2 of the Srimad Bhagavatam that sometimes it's explained by direct explanation and sometimes by summary explanations. Now, sometimes they give direct narrations about those different topics, and sometimes indirect narrations, such as stories. And of course, the real purpose is to understand the absolute transcendence of Sri Krishna, because everything material and spiritual actually rests upon the body of Lord Sri Krishna. Yep.
In the translation, word to word, Nirodha is given as going back to God.
Yep. We'll come to that. We'll have a look at each one. Have a look at the why. You know, there might be a slight difference in the choice of words to describe the same thing. Same thing is being described, just different points of view. So, for instance, you know, in the Bhagavatam we see various prayers to the Supreme Lord, which may describe one or more of these various topics. Sometimes the Supreme Lord himself is described in the various prayers in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes we see in such dialogues between Vidura and Maitreya, Kapila and Devahuti, that the Lord is directly described. Sometimes the Lord is indirectly described. The Samam Bonam, such as we heard how the Lord saved Parikit Maharaj and Ashvatam. So, in essence, hearing the story of how Parikit Maharaj was saved and saved from Ashvatam, we heard different aspects about Lord Sri Krishna. So that's sort of indirectly hearing about Krishna while hearing a story, you know, about some particular historical incident. So sometimes you're directly gaining knowledge about Krishna, and sometimes you're gaining knowledge about Krishna indirectly, that it happens to be part of some other, you know, prayer or story. Now, we know that every person has two types of characteristics: their personal, sarup, and their tatastha or marginal. So, because we're conditioned souls, we don't know the Lord's personal features. And if we hear about, you know, generally when people hear about Lord Sri Krishna, they get a misunderstanding, thinking him an ordinary person. So therefore, we hear about his various energies, how he utilizes his particular potencies. These are the marginal characteristics of the Lord. And in this way, it sort of brings it within the scope of, especially in the beginning, we hear about how he, you know, deals with his material energy, since that is, you know, particularly within the scope of our experience. And by understanding that the Krishna is a person who possesses these, you know, immense potencies, we get a little bit of an understanding of the absolute truth, and therefore when we hear about the person directly, keeping in mind that that person we're hearing about has these immense potencies, we can understand, you know, his personal features, you know, more clearly without any misconceptions. You know, so we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. That's from the Bhagavad Gita. That, an example of, you know, Krishna, he appears in his personal form. So, in essence, he's actually revealing, you know, his personal characteristics. But if we don't understand the immense potencies that that form of Krishna has, then we'll have a misunderstanding. So it's you know, the much of the personal characteristics, the name, fame, form, pastimes of the Lord, are described, especially in the 10th canto, the Srimad Bhagavatam. And many of the cantos leading up to them, yeah, you know, all of the cantos leading up to them, and some that precede, do discuss the various potencies of that, you know, supreme absolute truth, so that we do not misunderstand his personal characteristics as being mundane or ordinary, that he's an ordinary human being. You see various in those quotes of Prabhupada that you know, actually the personality of God is Sri Krishna is the shelter and abode of everything. That all the universes rest in his body. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the 10th object. So this is from Adilila again, verses 93 to 95. All the universes rest in his body. The 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the 10th object, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the shelter of all surrendered souls. He is known as Sri Krishna and he is the ultimate source of all the universes. Let me offer obeisances unto him. It's actually a quotation by Sridhar Swami from his commentary. We see there's another quote there by Prabhupada that the 10th canto is distinct from the first 9 cantos because it deals directly with the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. One will be unable to capture the effects of the 10th canto without going through the first 9 cantos. Okay. All right. So, Hare Krishna. All right. So, in which canto is the Summum Bonum discussed? Canto 10? Any other takers? Canto 10? All cantos, very good. He's obviously read the notes. All cantos. So we did just read a couple of quotes that certainly suggested by Srila Prabhupada and Sridhar Swami that the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam reveals the 10th object. Alright, and previously he said, I've described the other nine categories. The cause for the appearance of these nine is rightly called their shelter, right? And describes it. The tenth canto reveals the tenth object. In Prabhupada's preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam, he also says that the tenth canto is distinct from the first nine because it deals directly with the transcendental activities of the Lord, and one is unable to capture the effects of the tenth canto without going through the first nine. Now, the tenth canto certainly does deal with the summum bonum, but it doesn't say that it's only contained in the tenth canto. It's not stated there anywhere. And actually, if we see, there's another quote there, which is an explanation of the Mahapurana from the 12th canto, which clarifies this 7th chapter. That now this is from Jiva Goswami, his Sandavas. Now, Puranas such as the Srimad Bhagavatam deal with these 10 topics, whereas lesser Puranas deal with only 5. Alright, now the 5 that the lesser Puranas deal with are creation, secondary creation, the dynasty of kings, the reigns of Manus, the activities of various the reigns of the Manus and the activities of the various dynasties are the 5 characteristics of this Purana. Now, he says that the 10 principal topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam are found within each of the 12 cantos. The Jiva Goswami says, one should not try to assign each of the 10 topics to a particular canto, nor should the Srimad Bhagavatam be artificially interpreted to show that it deals with the topic successively. The simple fact is that all aspects of knowledge important to human beings summarized in the 10 categories mentioned are described with various degrees of emphasis and analysis throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll come to that. Because why do we need to study any of those? Because they actually reveal the nature of the absolute truth, and we'll see how that does that as we go through them one by one. You see very clearly. Yeah, that's why we do this Bhakti Bhai Bhava. Okay. Now, various acharyas have analysed the cantos of the Bhagavatam, and some of them are predominantly described. So that's, you know, you find this in the Tattva Sandarbhas, the Sandarbhas, the Jiva Goswami. Like, you know, cantos 2 and 3 will discuss this saga, you know, creation. Cantos 2, 3, and 4 will discuss Vishaga, like that. So, certainly Canto 10 predominantly discusses the summum bonum. So, in essence, most of them are discussed. Canto 11 and 12 deal with this Nirodha withdrawal, or sometimes called going back to Godhead. So pretty much by the time you get through the first 9 cantos, you will have discussed all of those to the degree that then you'll be able to appreciate the summum bonum explanations, which are more predominantly given in the 10th canto, but are certainly the discussion of the summum bonum is in each and every canto. But, you know, there is a... it's understood that by the time you get to the 10th canto, the student will have studied all these nine categories to the point where more confidential understanding can be given without fear that it will be misunderstood. Krishna can be described in his personal features, and by this stage it is understood that the students will understand that all they were describing a personal form, that that personal form has immense potencies, which is maintaining, you know, all of the spiritual and material, you know, worlds.
Artificially assign different subjects to different cantos.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily that it successively just presents.
That's right.
I think Vishnu Chakravarti assigns different cantos to different subjects. Does he?
Yes, you can. Mm. You can. Because you know, for instance, you know, Prabhupada does the same. In you know, if you look at each canto, he gives the actual a title for the canto, and then there are chapter titles. But each canto actually is one of these, and that is because you know, that canto you will find all of the 10 subjects are discussed. Not in any particular order, but you'll find maybe more information in that canto about, say, planetary systems than you will find in the other cantos, and therefore it can be called by that name. But it's not the only subject discussed. All nine are discussed, and you know, information about those planetary systems, which may be, you know, more quantity and quality of knowledge, in one sense, more quantity of knowledge and, you know, more deeper understanding is there. But, you know, we begin understanding about the planetary systems. For instance, planetary systems, this third one is you know, the third canto, seventh canto and 11th canto are considered predominant. But, you know, we've already begun understanding about the planetary systems on, you know, second canto, haven't we? You know, there's a certain amount of information because of the universal form, what have you. So yeah, it's not wrong to name them because there's a predominance, and in one sense, but yes, one should not. You can give a general heading for a certain amount of information that may be in a particular canto, but not mistaking that not to think that that's the only topic of these 10 that's discussed there. All 10 will be discussed, and they may not necessarily be in particular order. Now, we've just done the 12th canto, studying the 12th canto in the Srimad Bhagavatam classes in the morning. Those who are listening to that will notice, of course, that Sudha Goswami gives what appears to be a slightly different list to these 10. He doesn't give 10. I think he gives 5. But you know, for instance, when he discusses saga, you know, saga and visaga, that other topics which appear to be left out of his list are actually included in that because they very much related. So, you know, in effect, if you see his description, he covers definitely all of those 10 subjects in his list. It appears to be different, but again, if you see how the acharyas have, you know, you can present a table with the 5 or so that he's presented, and you see how, in the way that he's presented, he's covered 2 or 3, which each of those, and in that way he covers the same 10. They're approaching it from slightly different, you know, these 10 subjects, you know, are used to present different philosophical points. You know, you can speak, discuss these 10 different subjects. We're understanding that the 4 essential slokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chatur Sloki, actually expand into these 10 subjects. In other words, in order to properly understand the Chatur Sloki, you need to really understand these 10 subjects, you know, to expand your understanding of those 4 verses. And as we're saying, in order to understand the Summum Bonum, you need to understand these 9. In that, in order to understand the perspective of reality from the perspective of the living entity, as compared to the perspective of the Supreme Being, you need to understand these different topics. To understand the reality from the perspective of the living entity, his individual perspective, and also, you know, within creation, annihilation and maintenance, and also the aggregates, perspective of annihilation and maintenance and creation, what have you, we need to understand. So, different acharyas may use this same list to present a particular philosophical understanding, as Sudha Goswami is presenting a slightly different understanding in the 12th canto. We'll see a couple of different ways that this is used by Sukadeva Goswami in there. Therefore, you know, it appears it's just being handled differently, but it's the same essential 10 topics. The main point is that, from the very beginning, of course, is that, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam actually focuses entirely upon Lord Sri Krishna as the supreme shelter of all existence, the shelter of all reality. Bhagavatam basically, from the very beginning, middle and end, is actually describing Krishna. You know, all of these topics, the 10 topics, are all describing Krishna. You know, the materialists, of course, they propose that the material energy itself is, you know, the source of creation. It is the supreme shelter of all the material, you know, the material energy. That's the scientific view, you know. People who are godless and follow some scientific view, that the material energy itself is the summum bonum. Everything is coming, you know, from that shelter of the material energy. And Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a completely different. No, everything is resting on Krishna. How do we understand that? Therefore, we have to discuss these things. And people have so many different ideas of the basis of reality. So let's look at verse number 3. Now the next few verses begin to go through and discuss each of these in a summary statement. The first one, verse number 3. So we're looking at verses 3 to 7. The elementary creation of 16 items of matter, namely the five elements, fire, water, land, earth, air and sky. So then Prabhupada gives sound, form, taste, smell, touch. What are they? They're the tanmatras, the subtle elements. And Prabhupada then says the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. And the mind, which is known as saga. Then the result and the subsequent result and interaction of the modes of mature nature is called vishaga. Alright. Prabhupada lists them as 16 items of matter. Let's write those down. Maybe. Okay, who's got a Bhagavatam? Does this board work? Is there some secret to this one? Is that someone got something? Yeah? Would you be able to tidy up one side of that? We'll probably end up using a few boards. Now while he's doing that, someone can use the red and just write on here. Might need your Bhagavatam this time, just to put those 16 elements of matter there. Okay, now there's also, you'll see probably one of the final quotes you have in Prabhupada's quotes dealing with this section. Prabhupada does give a list in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a purport to verses 91 and 92. And there he actually gives a little definition. What do you notice about Srila Prabhupada's definition in the Adi Leela of Saga that's different than this translation in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Prabhupada's quotes. Yeah. Do you have that? Who's got that? Does anyone want to borrow one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Is that, what do we got? Yep. Fire, water, land, air, sky. And then we got eyes, nose, ears, tongue, skin, the mind, 11. And then sound, form, taste. Yep. Okay. All right. So now, perhaps on that board, who you want to do?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as far as the five different elements, earth, water, fire, land, air, and ether, you won't find any differences. As far as the tanmatras, the subtle elements, sound, form, taste, smell, touch, you won't find any differences in the different statements you'll find here and there. These ones here, eyes, nose, ears, tongue, skin, and mind. We'll have a look at that. So right, so these are, put five senses, just write five senses, and then in another column, put the mind. Alright, have we noticed anything different? In, if you look at Prabhupada's definition in the purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says 10 senses. Okay, now the other difference that so write that up there, 10 senses. Now the other thing where you find difference is sometimes it states, you know, in the translation we've got and the mind. So put the mind there. Alright. In Prabhupada's purport to the Adilila, you know, chapter 2, verses 91 and 92, he says, the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, and the total material energy. So under mind, put that. Mind, intelligence, false ego, and the total material energy, all the universal form. Samachara is just, what's that? Mind, intelligence, false ego, total material energy, yep, universal form. Okay. Okay, so, and then, what do we understand the Mahatattva to be? How many elements in the Mahatattva? How many material elements? 16, thank you. So, alright, there's 16 elements. 5 gross material elements, 11 working senses. Right, so basically, it is the 5 gross elements. Then you've got the 10 senses and the mind.
Before they go to 5 gross, topic and five subtle elements. Is that what makes the total ten?
Five gross elements, 10 senses, and the mind. Now, that's usually given as the definition of the ingredients of the Mahatattva. 16. 10 senses means 5 senses for acquiring knowledge, the sense of sight, the sense of smell, the sense of taste, the sense of hearing, the sense of touch. Keep in mind, when we talk about the senses, we're talking about the subtle senses. Those subtle senses sit within the sense organ, but when we actually refer to the senses, the living entity, when he leaves his body, he takes his subtle senses with him. Because they're subtle. The gross elements, so for instance, you know, the subtle sense of sight is seated within the eyeball, just as the mind is seated within the heart. Just as when the living entity dies, he takes his subtle, the 11th sense, which is the mind, with him. So these other senses are also subtle. The sense organ, the gross physical organ, remains, to, you know, destroyed with the material body. there are five, senses for action. You know, we have the arms, the legs. we have the tongue, genitals, and anus. So, all right. 10 senses disappeared. Our subtle senses have just become more subtle. Huh? Someone just died. What's that?
I thought you need to explain or something.
Huh? Oh, no, that's okay. You can put them back. There's an impersonalist in the room. We've been robbed of our senses. No. Okay, so you see, you know, this is the Mahatattva, which we know is manifest when Mahavishnu glances at the material energy and as described in the, it's in the word for word to some degree that guna vaisamyat, by interaction of the three modes of nature. You know, when the Lord glances at the pradhan, where the modes of material nature are, you know, inactive, in a neutral state, he actually agitates the modes of material nature. They become active, and that agitated state of the Mahatattva then, you know, produces the 16 elements of creation. Alright? Here they're listed as here, 5 gross elements, 10 senses in the mind. We know that is the Mahatattva. In Prabhupada's purport to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he also lists the, you know, the 5 gross elements. The 5 subtle elements are listed. Where are we? Put them there too, the 5. Hang on, tension. Yeah, put up here 5 gross elements, 5 subtle elements. So, if we see, Saga is talking about the creation of these elements. Here it lists five sadhu elements, but they're not listed in the original 16, you know, which we know as the Mahatattva. And here, sometimes it's listed as five senses, where sometimes there is listed as 10 senses. But Prabhupada listed as 10 senses in one of his items. And then, the other element is the mind, which the mind, and Prabhupada just says the mind in this translation. But if you look at all the, you know, the commentaries and the actual, you know, what have we got? Diyam of the mind, is actually analyzed by Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to indicate the Mahatattva, which we also know as the total material intelligence. It also indicates the Mahatattva in the state where the false ego is generated, therefore the subtle sense, when we, Prabhupada here, when he says the mind, but the various acharyas say that when we say the mind, it actually includes all of these different, you know, the subtle control of the other senses, the mind. You know, so the intelligence is there within the mind, the false ego is there within the mind, the total material energy. The point being is that, you know, in these various descriptions, it is when it's actually looked at, the actual word, the Sanskrit word, and what it actually means in this various context, not all things are stated. So we will see that, for instance, whenever we read about the Virata Purush, even Prabhupada says in this chapter, it describes, I think in verse, where it begins to describe... So for instance, in verse 18, it describes that from the mouth the palate became manifest, and thereupon the tongue was also generated. After this, all the different tastes came into existence so that the tongue can relish them. There's no mention of any demigods there. In the purport, Prabhupada's first statement, because he follows the commentary that all the acharyas make in regard to these, is that the gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deity, because Varuna is a controlling deity for all relishable juices. It's not stated, but it suggests it. So, you know, it's similar to our statement that if I said... you know... this evening, you know, I will go home to my family. So, you know, it suggests, I don't have to state all the furniture in the house, you know, or the fact that there will be relatives there, and, you know, so many different types of relatives, and that we may talk to each other. and maybe have something to eat and interact, and you know, all of that's suggested by a simple statement, and you know, one wouldn't understand that. Well, he just, you know, he went home and then, you know, he just sort of sat in the chair looking at the wall, didn't speak to anyone, you know, he went, they didn't speak to him, he just, he went, you know, there's a whole lot of other things which is suggested that don't need to be stated. When you're taking these statements, you have to, the acharyas take them in that way. They're making that point because you will see differences. You know, one of the biggest differences we see here is generally five senses is the most commonly mentioned for this saga. The Prabhupada just says 10 senses. You know, in one purport, even though previously he stated 5. Because, you know, and, you know, for any of the senses to be there, the Mahatattva has to be there. And for the senses to be there, the Ahankara must have also been produced. Because we know that they are produced, you know, there is initial creation of the Mahatattva, the elementary, the elements are created, but when the Mahatattva is further agitated and the mode of ignorance becomes predominant and tamagun becomes prominent, so from Mahatattva is generally the mode of passion is prominent, rajas. Before that, the mode of goodness was predominant. The Mahatattva mode of passion is prominent, but when the mode of Tama is prominent in the Mahatattva, the Ahankara becomes manifest. so in essence, although we're and you know, so these things are understood, and you know, the total material energy, the false ego, the intelligence can be summed up in one word, the mind. But if we understand the mind and the senses and the sense objects and the subtle elements are there, that these things are actually also there as well. So generally, you know, someone asks you the Mahatattva, you generally say 5 gross elements, you leave out the subtle elements. It's understood they must be there. You say the 5 gross elements, the 10 senses and the mind. That's how you would usually define the Mahatattva. And usual to describe the process of saga, you know, what has Mahavishnu manifest, 16 elements, which is 5 gross elements, the 5 subtle, which is usually not included in the statement of the Mahatattva, the mind, but that, right? But here Prabhupada does something else unusual. He actually, you know, uses the words eyes, nose, ears, tongue, skin, which is actually the physical organ of the senses, by saying that, in essence, you know, we understand that the subtle sense organs are included within there. but generally, when these 5 senses are referred to, they're referred to as the most commonly the subtle knowledge acquiring senses, the sense of sight, the sense of taste, the sense of smell, the sense of you know, touch, the sense of hearing. That's the most common way that they're at that. So, in essence, in, you know, the commentaries to Jiva Goswami, especially in the 12th canto, it discusses the 24 items of material creation, and it discusses that all these elements are in fact produced by, you know, in this process of saga, they all manifest in this, they all become present. So those 24 items, which, you know, Brahma then combines to, in the Vishaga, or the sub-creation, secondary creation, he combines these ingredients in different proportions to produce the different types of bodies for the living entities, as ordained by the Supreme Lord. So, so usually the 24, you get, you know, the five gross elements. What are they?
Earth, air, ether, water, fire.
Yep. The five subtle elements, which are? The five, subtle knowledge acquiring senses, the five senses of action, working senses, there's 20 there, there's the mind, there's a false ego, and there's the intelligence. Right, and then that's 23. I think the jiva is 24. I should include mahatattva. So all of those are actually included in this process. We've got. Four groups of five. Sky, it means space. The sky refers to space or ether. Thank you. Now, there was a list somewhere further back in your student books. Is that it? You're looking at that? The
Yeah. So we have false ego in goodness produces...
Page 99. Sarga, yes. This is the list for Sarga. Yes, this is created by the Lord. These elements are all created by the Lord himself, not by Brahma. Brahma just mixes these in different quantities in order to... I'm just checking that last... 87. I believe the 20... Remember the 24th is the Mahatattva, Jiva is 25, and the Paramatma is 26. Mahatattva or total material energy. There, so that comes to 24. Five gross elements, five subtle elements, five knowledge acquiring senses, five senses of action, mind, false ego, intelligence, and Mahatattva.
Mahatattva already has five gross elements in
here, plus mind. Yes. It you know, as we described in several even in the Chatter Sloka, that the elements themselves enter within everything and at the same time can remain separate. So sometimes they are listed as a separate ingredient, even though it's it forms other ingredients itself. You know, it'd be something like saying that, you know, if I put a big thing of clay here, and then you made a clay pot, and you made a clay doll, and you made, so we might count up the different things that you've made, so we've got all those objects plus that big lot of clay that we still have here, you know, which is the generating product for many more objects like that. And Mahatattva just literally produces unlimited material forms, like a big thing of clay will produce so many different clay objects. So sometimes it can be counted as an object.
Material energy plus time.
The Mahatattva.
Yeah.
Time in this list is considered to be an energy of Paramatma, and so quite often it's not listed. The Paramatma himself is listed. The Paramatma of course means Vishnu. But time is an energy of Vishnu himself. Is that your question?
No, I'm just saying, can you say that the Mahatattva is material energy plus time?
The material energy, yes, agitated by the by time, yes. It is agitated by time.
And and then it produces
energy. Yes, and when the material energy or the pradhan is agitated by time, that material energy manifests as the mahatattva. And the mahatattva in itself has 16 principal ingredients which are not manifest in the pradhan. But although those 16, you know, so that the 16 ingredients in the mahatattva, then the mahatattva, when it is further transformed by tamaguna, it actually manifests the full 24 different ingredients. Now, you know, these different ingredients of the mahatattva for instance, generally let's describe 10 senses, mind, 5 gross elements. You know, these different elements have the potential of manifesting the sattva elements that may be contained within them. We know that from from ether comes sound. But before the living entity literally as we see in the description of the Maha the Virata Rupa, that the Virata Rupa desires to taste, and therefore within the Virata Rupa the senses, the place where the subtle sense sits, the predominating deities, as we said, that is actually the fifth. Because when we say these five, some say there are actually five groups of five, and they include the five the demigods that control each of those. So, but you know, when the Virata Rupa desires, then in essence, all the different five groups, elements manifest. And in essence, because he's manifesting them in aggregates, then they also become manifest for the living entities, who then Brahma awards to the various living entities individually. Let's put it like it's exactly the same as in essence the mother's womb. Now generally, of course, humans give birth to a few mothers, but let's take some other species where that gives multiple births. So sometimes you see which type of living entity gives birth to many from, what's that?
Dog.
How many? Couple of dozen? What's that? Mice. Got a plague of mice in Victoria now. So there might be, so the mother is producing within the womb in aggregate the gross elements, the subtle elements, the different, knowledge acquiring senses, and the sense organs. She's actually producing them in aggregate. And the individuals, because it is being produced in aggregate, therefore the individuals are having their individual senses and what have you produced individually. But there's no need for the mother to produce them in aggregate if she has no desire or if there are no seeds within her womb. So, and the elements may be produced successively as they're required. So, for instance, the mother may, of course, children may be fed within the womb through the umbilical cord. The little mice, they all have one, do they? Who cuts them? What's that?
Only mammals.
Only mammals. Are they mammals? There you go. Yeah. Okay. So, in essence, to feed the baby mouse within the womb, the mother has got to produce the organ that will get the food. Then the food comes. You can't give the food first if there's nothing to feed it into the baby. You see, the point I'm getting at is that sometimes these different elements are described as 16, or what have you, because there's no need for the other senses to be manifest until, certain stages where the living entity requires to get the individual bodies like that. So, therefore, sometimes it's not necessarily that these are just arbitrarily giving whatever numbers they want. It's because we understand to some degree what we can about creation, but in essence, at the stage of the Mahatattva, the Virata Rupa, at the stage of the Maha Hare Krishna. The senses are moving again. We have you want one of these? Yeah, you can probably take that one. Yeah. You can take that one. Okay. So you see how, within the womb of the mother, certain things are manifest, certain things, the potential, the subtle form of them is there, but until one thing is done, the next thing can't be done. So, there is certainly, just for a general understanding, we can understand that the Mahatattva, which is manifested, but the Virata Rupa is not manifested, so there may not be a requirement for certain, parts of the elements to become fully manifested, even though they may be there in their subtle form. And then, of course, when the Virata Rupa does become manifest, those elements begin to manifest according to the requirement of the Virata Rupa being present, and then of course as the living entities are awarded their various situations, then again there is a further manifestation. So it's not just that they're just picking different numbers and according to various different stages, we can say, we should stick the 16 for the Mahatattva, and then, these ones, they give this list here. Generally, we mean for the saga, this is the creation the first creation of the elements for manifesting the universe. Here these senses usually refer to the subtle senses. But here we do see in, you know, in Prabhupada's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, chapter 2, the purport there, Prabhupada says the ten senses, and he says the mind, the intelligence, false ego, and the total material energy or the universal form. He mentions the universal form, and Vishwanath Chakravarti, the core, also, he says that saga means the manifestation of the elements, the subtle elements. When he says senses, he just says senses, just in general. He doesn't say 5, 10, he just says senses. Ahankara, false ego, and the Mahatattva, as well as their description in the universal form. Cause when the Lord creates transformation of the gunas. So he also, in essence, it appears that, you know, this process takes us up to the universal form, manifestation of the universe. But Brahma has not awarded different bodies to the living entities yet. So this process of creation, saga, you know, would appear up to that stage of the manifestation of the universal form, but not awarding different bodies yet. In general, the description of the Mahatattva is slightly different from the 16 elements here, in the sense that the Mahatattva mentions 10 senses. Our board went out the door. Ten senses in the mind. Whereas this one, as I said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he just says the senses. He doesn't say 5, he doesn't say 10. He just says senses. He doesn't refer to which types, he just says the senses. In which case, you know, that's why Srila Prabhupada, in essence, has just summarized it like this. So it could be 5, could be 10. But there is a slight difference in the 16 elements of the Mahatattva compared to the list we're getting here. And generally we understand that the Mahatattva is a production first, later comes the universal form. Right? So therefore, you know, there is a reason why there is a slight difference, and therefore, you know, that example I've given, which is an example that the Acharyas give, well, Prabhupada actually uses it in his purport, that it's exactly like, you know, the production of the bodies for the children within the womb. So looking at that same example, we understand that just a different stages of the same creation of the aggregates, senses, and, you know, required and ingredients required for the living entities within the mother's womb, there's that creation of that aggregate, and then, you know, as various stages, then certain things become more and more manifest. You know, the child is gradually fed through the umbilical cord, which suggests that the umbilical cord is, you know, in essence, it's replacing the mouth. But if you're going to eat something, and someone offers you, here you go, there's a plate of food, first they've got to check, oh, do you have a mouth? And if you've got a mouth, before they offer you a plate of food, they've got to see, is your mouth working? In other words, are the demigods, you know, giving you facility? So, one thing first. First things first. That's my understanding of why there are slight differences between the description of the 16 elements and the Mahatattva, which is a previous manifestation, and then up to the Virata Rupa, where the aggregate is being manifest, but the living entities haven't actually been awarded their material bodies yet. It gives a slightly different 16 like that. Although we understand in essence that in essence all the 24 elements are there in one, you know, some more manifest and some are still, you know, not quite manifest, although their potential is there, whether we're talking about, you know, the Mahatattva or the or this stage of saga and the universal form. And if you want to just, if you, so therefore if you want to summarize and someone says to you, oh, what's saga? I generally, that's the manifestation of all the elements, usually numbering 24, you know, four groups of five, some say five groups of five, as they include the demigods, that subtle, you know, form of the demigods. All of those elements, that is, and then Brahma's role, he takes all those different 24 elements and he will provide bodies for the living entities according to their desires. That's a general understanding. If you get you know, therefore you be a little careful that someone says, oh no, no, I've got a different list, you know. You don't know what you're talking about. You better go back and do your bhakti vaibhava again. Alright, so, yep, your question.
Three modes of materialization, because the anti-pressure is initiated by these three modes.
Yes.
So where are these three modes fit into?
The three modes of material nature, they're within the material energy. And but they're in a neutral state in the beginning, and then by the time element, which is the glance of the Lord, it actually agitates the material energy, and those, it disturbs the equilibrium of the modes, and then the three modes begin to manifest elements. First the Mahatattva. So when the material, when the modes of material nature become agitated, and the mode of passion becomes prominent, the Mahatattva manifests with 16 ingredients. And when the material energy becomes, is still being agitated, but it is the mode of ignorance becomes prominent, then the ahankara or false ego manifests. And then that false ego, influenced by either goodness, passion, or ignorance, will produce different elements. So false ego in the mode of goodness produces the mind and the various demigods. False ego in the mode of passion produces the various senses and the intelligence. And false ego in the mode of ignorance will produce the gross and subtle senses.
Mm-hmm. And false ego and more of passion produce intelligence?
Mm-hmm. because the intelligence is the mind will either accept or reject something, and then the intelligence will literally deliberate how that will be achieved, and will actually utilize the various senses in order to achieve what the mind has in fact will to do. It's more subtle, yes. It is more. Therefore, the intelligence is actually controlling the mind, and therefore, it's higher in that sense. It's also more subtle. more subtle than the intelligence is false ego. So. You're wondering why something which is higher is produced from a lower mode.
Yeah.
Because it is related with activity. It's related with, you know, action, which is a symptom of the mode of passion. The mind is say more reflective in the sense that you know, it has thoughts about something, it has feelings about something, and it will come to a conclusion about something as a result of those thoughts and feelings. And then it will, you know, that conclusion, yes, I will do this or I won't do that. So it comes to a but then the intelligence will actually coordinate the senses to, you know, actively avoid that thing happening or make that thing happen. Prabhupada gives in one of the purports. let's have a look. In verse 32, Srila Prabhupada, the translation is, the sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature. And the modes of material nature are products of the false ego. Right. The mind is subjected to all kinds of material experiences, happiness and distress. So it feels happiness, it feels distress. And the intelligence is the feature of the mind's deliberation. Okay, yeah. Right. Now, turning the page, it says, this false ego associates with different modes of material nature, and thus the senses become attached to the modes of material nature. See, in the translation, the sense organs are attached to the modes of material nature. So, the false ego associates with different modes of material nature. The living entity, in essence, is identifying himself as a particular person, a particular body, and he's associating with different modes of nature. And while he's associating, his senses may become attached predominantly to one of those aspects of the modes of material nature. Yeah. then he goes on further to say that the mind is the instrument for feeling different material experiences, but intelligence is deliberative and can change everything for the better. The intelligent person, therefore, can attain salvation from the illusion of material existence by proper use of intelligence. So he describes that a little better, a little more. Thus the intelligent man gets rid of the illusion of matter and false ego and is promoted to the real life of eternity. Intelligence is higher than the mind in the sense that it can guide the mind to actually get out of the material world. Right? It can give direction. Ultimately, you know, intelligence gives proper discrimination and direction, and therefore it's able to deliver the mind, which doesn't have that sense of direction. It's just, oh, this is bad, oh, this is good, this is bad. But the intelligence has, you know, a more sense of discrimination. Oh, that may be bad, but it's for your own good. Like that, you know. So the mind's just, oh, this is good, this is bad, I think, you know, so many thoughts. You know. The intelligence has an aspect to it which can control the mind and take it to a higher place. But the reason the mind is produced from the mode of passion is because generally what do the living entities do? They don't do that. Their intelligence acts literally as subordinate in a lower position than the mind, doesn't it? That you know, the mind says, you know, oh, smoking cigarettes is good. And then the intelligence thinks, oh, how can we get some money to buy some, you know, cigarettes? So, in this sense, you know, for all the living entities in the material world, the intelligence is generally acting in a lower, literally just facilitating the actions, and the mind is actually acting in a subordinate role. So because it's more subtle, being more subtle means it's the next door neighbour to the spirit soul. Prabhupada says that. It's a little closer, the nature of the intelligence. The more subtle we get, the more closer we get to the actual nature of the spirit soul. So therefore, it's higher in that sense. You know, in the spiritual kingdom, they have full proper discrimination and intelligence and direction. So it's higher, it's more subtle, it's closer to the natural state of the soul. So it's higher in that sense. It's lower in the sense that it's manufactured, you know, it's a product of the mode of passion, and generally, therefore, it has the tendency for action, and it takes a subordinate role of just fulfilling the what the mind has accepted or rejected. So it has a lower and a higher quality. If we utilize the intelligence just for fulfilling material action, literally it's acting as a manifestation of the mode of passion. And that's what most living entities do. That's a fact.
If they were using intelligence, like as intelligence, then they'd use it for self-realization.
Yes, yes, yeah. And to do that, what happens is the super soul actually feeds the intelligence or gives, you know, higher guidance, and the Shastras feed the... So our intelligence becomes Shastra, our intelligence becomes the direction of sadhus and guru, like that. And therefore, the more subtle aspect of intelligence is properly utilized. And that more subtle aspect of the intelligence then controls the mind.
The psychologists are correct in saying that all emotions and everything are felt by the mind, in a sense that the perverted, like the material experience, is all experienced by the mind. So then the psychologists are correct in saying that all emotions now are basically experienced by the mind.
Yes, the only difference is they don't know what the mind is. They may say something which is very close to something we have in the Bhagavatam, but actually they don't know the proper, they don't know what the mind, the intelligence and the false ego or real ego is. They may make some statements which sometimes appear to be something correct. But you'll find because they don't really know what they're talking about, the next book they put out they say, oh, that was all wrong. We now said it's something different. Especially psychologists. Yeah.
We know how Bhagavatam says creation occurs.
Yes.
And we know what the medical school says how creation occurs.
Yes.
There's a missing link there. Is Bhagavatam building that link? Like in medical science, we know.
Yeah.
Initially, I used to always think. When does the soul enter? That used to be always a question, and then I found it in Bhagavatam saying it is a sperm that carries the soul.
Mm-hmm.
I got that point. Now, when we're talking about Mahatattva and all that, where is the Mahatattva during the creation? Is it, I'm lost actually. Where is the Mahatattva when you're saying that when the child is being created? You know, there's a sperm and there's an ova. Where is the
Mahatattva there? Well, Prabhupada gives an example in the Bhagavatam. That's why it's good to read these books. He describes here somewhere, there's an example that just as, I think it's in discussion of, let's see if we can find this. In verse 43, now Prabhupada says, thereafter, at the end of the millennium, the Lord Himself, in the form of Rudra the Destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. And in the purport, he says that creation is very appropriately compared to clouds. Clouds are created or situated in the sky, and when they are displaced, they remain in the same sky without manifestation. Right? So that's how, you know, we can understand the Mahatattva. You know, we can look up into the sky, and we can say there are no clouds there. But in fact, the clouds are there. And, you know, at a certain point, we can perceive, you know, when they become condensed in their manifestation. And then when those clouds, the manifestations are dispersed, they're actually still there. The clouds are still there, but we can't, oh, the cloud's gone, but actually they're still there. So, you know, creation and annihilation and these various different material elements are like that. You know, that's even in an example like this, the cloud is something we see every day. We're seeing, oh, there's no clouds, but actually there are clouds. You know, in a more subtle form, less condensed. And then, you know, when the clouds are gone, we say the clouds are gone like this. So, we can't see even what's right in front of our eyes just, you know, on this planet within the sky. But in a similar way, how do we see these more subtle? Because we know that, you know, more subtle than, you know, the four elements there, of course, is the subtle elements, you know, and the subtle senses and the mind is more subtle and the intelligence is more subtle. We can't see the mind. I know you've got a mind. You just ask a question. It's a good one. But I can't see your mind. You know, intelligence is even more subtle. False ego, more subtle. Mahat-tattva is even more subtle. How can we say? Just because we can't see them doesn't mean that they're not present.
No, I accept that. I'm just, I accept that, okay, there's a mother that can't see it. Like, for example,
yes.
I can't see the soul. I accept it.
Yes.
But now, in the creation, is there an explanation that, for example, we know that as far as medically, when the sperm is fertilizing the ovum,
yes,
the zygote, then that starts dividing.
Yes.
But the mahatattva has to be there much before. See, that's when the life starts for that particular individual.
Yeah.
Now, when was the mahatattva stays there? Was it even before the sperm is formed? Where there's a link there. We know that mahatattva that initiates and Lord initiates and the
mahatattva is way at the beginning.
For example, a baby is being created.
All right.
So exactly, we know that medical
mahatattva is already there.
It's always there, right? That's fine. But for that particular individual, when they are getting the everything is initiated, all getting together to form. So when does it happen? For that particular individual, like for example, we say that according to
that's
desires, person's previous desires or whatever, they get a
suitable
body.
It's like asking this question, that, you know, our body is made from earth, water, fire, air, you know, ether. So we might say, you know, at what point is the air in the body? In fact, the air is always there. And a certain portion of the air is amalgamated within that individual body, but the air is always there. And when the body is dispersed, the air still remains.
So then the mahatattva should be there inside every individual?
Yes. Ultimately, within the heart. Within the heart, yes. Because these... our board's gone out the door, but... You know, quite often, you know, those... you know, actually, the mahatattva, very subtle, it is a more subtle manifestation of false ego. And false ego sits within the heart. And false ego, a more subtle form of false ego is mahatattva.
False ego.
What's that? So it exists within the living entity, but it is always existing as an aggregate quantity of mahatattva outside. And then it's always existing in aggregate quantity, and then when the living entity is manifests his particular body, then certain tiny little proportions of the aggregate are amalgamated within that body, the subtle and the gross body.
So that means the sperm and ovum, they don't have the heart, they have only the nucleus. So we can
take
the heart.
They have the subtle heart. Even the sperm, we know that the super soul resides within his heart or her heart, the size of a thumb. The super soul is residing within the heart of every living entity. If it's a living entity, the super soul is in his heart, the size of a thumb.
Yeah. But I'm asking, when you say again, in the sperm and ovum, there's no heart. Unless you say.
Well, he's residing within the heart. How can there be no heart?
No.
You say the physical organ of the heart. So the subtle. There is the, you know, you have the senses have their gross physical organ, but the only reason that gross physical organ is molded around the subtle sense. The sperm has a mind, right? And the mind is situated in the heart. We know the sperm has a mind because he's racing along, you know. I'm going to be first. he knows which way to swim. There's a mind there, so the mind is situated in the heart. It's seated. It's like a seat. It's like but it's very subtle. The super soul also sits there on the subtle seat of the heart of that living entity. The sperm, he has a mind, he has a heart. They're all there. But, you know, very subtle. They gradually, from the subtle, gradually they become more, you know, gross manifestation. That's also described in this chapter, all those things. All these things are actually in Prabhupada's purports. In this chapter. Okay, so we've looked at one. Saga. The others are not so difficult. That's okay. But we spent a little bit of time on that one because there were a couple of anomalies that you may come across, and I just want you to make sure that you have an understanding of the general principle and why there may be some variations in the details, that's all. And those variations, you know, in summary, are not accidental. We are talking about different stages of creation, generally, where the various elements of creation are more or less required. And when they're not required, they may still be present in their subtle form. A more subtle form. Okay, let's look at verse 4 of the 10th chapter. Yep.
So, is this saga?
Saga.
Considered to be the Mahatattva or no?
Yes, Mahatattva is part of the saga creation. It's one of the elements created within the saga creation, yes.
So those 16 elements manifest after the Mahatattva?
Yeah, they are the Mahatattva itself manifests 16 elements. The Mahatattva itself, it can be considered, you know, an element in itself. So, for instance, if we say so we have these ones here, and then we say the mind, which, you know, includes the Mahatattva in a more subtle form, which means that the Mahatattva is an aggregate quantity of 16 elements, and these elements here, these, you know, when we say these 16 elements, we're talking about 16 elements that can, you know, are there that we can count separately, you know, as right. So, for instance, we gave the example of the, you know, the clay. You know, so we have our quantity of clay. So it is one item that's, you know, has been, someone has made it, brought in a lump of clay. We can, from that, say we have a lump of clay which has, you know, some of that clay is very gooey, so it's very liquidy, some is very solid, and you know, you can have some of it, you can powder up a little bit, you know, and with the clay in those three different states, you might make all sorts of different objects. So you have your individual objects and you have your original clay in different sort of degrees, like that. So they can all be perceived separately. And then if you look at that block of clay, you know, someone there's made a jug, and then you know, a potter will look at that clay and say, oh, I can see another 20 jugs there in that block of clay. What's that? Yes. Yes, yeah, they can be perceived, you know, separately from the Mahatattva. So these are, you know, different perceivable separate objects, and the Mahatattva still remains an object in it, an element in itself. Well, Mahat is something which is great, or that, and Tattva is like a, you know, a truth or principle. Yeah, so it's the greatest principle upon which the material energy is founded. You know, material principle. Okay. Text number 4. The right situation for the living entities. Now, just one thing about Brahma, just to say a couple more things about Brahma's creation. Vishaga, he creates the different living beings according to their stored up karmic impressions, which would mean that, you know, manifesting his own sons, 10 sons, you know, and the various Prajapatis, that's also part of Brahma's Vishaga. That's not done during, you know, Mahavishnu's creative elements, that's done during Brahma's creative secondary creation. See, you see here this uti or utaya, creative impetus. In essence, you know, when Sudha Goswami or some of the acharyas may discuss Brahma's sub-creation, it will, you know, it can include this creative impetus, or, you know, the impressions, the desires from previous karma. It can be included, you know. So here we understand it's a separate topic, but it can be almost discussed as if it's just the one topic of Vishaga. So you see that with Sudha Goswami's description in the 12th canto, some things are included, you know, two or three topics are included in his, you know, one discussion. So all 10 topics are there. He discusses them definitely. But they're not stated in this exactly, as that's all. Alright, text number 4. The right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace of mind under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The manus, their laws, and their laws are meant to give right direction in life, and the impetus for activity is the desire for fruitive work. So we're looking at this sthana, the planetary systems, and we're looking at you know, poshana, protection, we're looking at uttaya, creative impetus, and we're looking at manvantara, manus. There are four which are discussed in this here. Yes, sthitir or sthanam, poshanam, uttaya, and mandanta. Prabhupada's description of these and the purport to Chaitanya Charitamrita is very nice. Sthana, the maintenance of the universe. Now here it's called planetary systems. Brahma creates the universe, Shiva destroys it, Lord Vishnu maintains it. But even Brahma's creation is a secondary creation. It was actually created by Vishnu himself as well. And he is maintaining everything. That is, therefore, he is more glorious. He is also maintaining Brahma and Shiva. It does indicate the glory of the Supreme Lord. We understand, of course, that when we talk about Vishnu, that he is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Although he's an expansion, he is the same Supreme Lord in a different function. But it is he who maintains he awards the destination for all the living entities, and that means all the various planetary systems. There's so many destinations within the 14 worlds. So this one can sometimes be called maintenance. Planetary systems is sometimes called maintenance. Poshanam, which is protection, or sometimes called sustenance. Now, those that the Lord is maintaining, those who, are very grateful for the Lord's maintenance and take shelter of him and thankful and appreciative, then he gives special protection and special mercy.
So portion refers to the protection of the devotees specifically?
Yep. And the sustenance of all living entities.
So it refers to both?
Yep. Now, this creative impetus because the living entities are born with a proclivity or an impetus or a desire from their previous karmic impressions, and according to that they are placed in different higher and lower places within the universe. And according to their particular desires, they want to work in this way, they want to use their senses in that way, the Lord is maintaining them. He's awarding their destinations, their particular material body, he's maintaining them, and allowing them to work in different ways. Now the manus, the manvantara, in essence, it's a period controlled by the manus. You have to understand, within those periods controlled by the manus, there are the manus themselves, there are various demigods who assist the manus, there are various saints and sages, of prominence within those periods of the manus. There are various, very, very influential kings who, you know, such as you have the coming in the dynasty of the sun god and the moon god, they're also particular, they're very saintly persons. There are particular incarnations that appear within, you know, so for each manvantara, there is a manu, there's also an incarnation of the Lord who appears. So he's also, so when we say manvantara, you know, referred to the manu and the Lord that incarnates within there. All of those different histories of those personalities describe Saddharma, or the religious principles by which one can attain, you know, ultimately freedom from the influence of the material modes of nature. You know, one can be, you know, situated in religious codes which are, you know, means that it is in line with the way that the Lord is maintaining the universe. So the Lord is maintaining the universe. He has certain rules and regulations that he does not like, you know, cows, for instance, to be innocently slaughtered. That's the way he likes to maintain the universe. And that understanding is given by the different personalities and incarnations and what have you in their histories through these various manus, manvantaras. So although the living entities have their own, you know, particular desires for fruitive activities, still the Lord is making sure that they have the religious codes. And that's the way that he maintains the universe, in, you know, just the way, you know, so many citizens have, they all have different inclinations. Fine. Not, you know, the government is saying not everyone has to be a bricklayer. You want to be a bricklayer, you want to do this, you want to do that, fine, that's okay. You have your different uttaya, creative, you know, or uti, creative impetus, but as long as you follow the rules and regulations set down, then, you know, everything will be all living entities will be maintained nicely, including yourself. And if you do that really nicely, you get special protection and mercy from the Lord. Like that. So we can see how, you know, even now, because, you know, the Supreme Lord is actually maintaining the material creation, allowing for all the living entities to have their individual proclivities, and at the same time regulating them in such a way that they're not encroaching upon the rights of other living entities, and that they're actually making progress back towards the spiritual world. Actually, the Lord is maintaining his creation very, very nicely. And that means we're, you know, by understanding this, we understand that the Lord is glorious. Therefore, you see that in this here, planetary systems, one of those there, it describes Vaikuntha Vijaya as one of the words used in the Sanskrit. So as Prabhupada says, you know, the right situation for the living entities is to obey the laws of the Lord and thus be in perfect peace under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He sort of summarized all of that in, you know, those principles are there in that sentence. Sthanam Poshanam Uttaya. Verse number 5. The science of God describes the incarnations of the personality of Godhead and his different activities together with the activities of his great devotees. So, of course, here is an opportunity to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead apart from one's, you know, material propensities which are being regulated. Here is offering the opportunity to hear and chant about such literatures as the Srimad Bhagavatam and actually go back to Godhead. You know, so in essence it's a necessary item for the liberation, because why should one go back to Godhead? Well, one is because not only your material, you can't remain in the material world forever. The whole material world is going to be withdrawn. One day the lights will go out, the sun will be turned off, the moon and the stars, and you'll be left in the cold. So, you know, better attain liberation. How do I do that? You listen, you hear and chant about this science of God, the incarnations of the Lord, which is reminding the living entity of his eternal transcendental nature, you know, in relationship with the Lord in the spiritual world. Now, verse number 6, Nirodha, returning back home, back to Godhead. It also describes mukti or liberation in verse number 6. Now, in essence, you know, this Nirodha withdrawal is the winding up of the material creation. It is a process of annihilation. Sutta Goswami describes in the 12th canto a little bit more about this one, in the sense that there are four different types of withdrawal or annihilation or winding up. One type of winding up is the total wind up of the whole material manifestation. Hello? Okay. One type of withdrawal, annihilation, or winding up is the winding up of the universe at the end of Brahma's life. The whole universe is wound up. Another type of annihilation is the periodical, which is at the end of Brahma's day. Also, you know, the acharyas point out that within the periodical, you can also include at the end of the manvantara, there's a little annihilation then. So periodical. And a third is constant. That means everything is constantly being destroyed by the, that's the very nature of the material. The body is constantly being destroyed. You make anything in this material world, immediately it begins decaying, decomposing. And the final annihilation is called liberation, when the living entity ceases material existence altogether. That is, you know, absolute annihilation of material existence. Right? So therefore, and that's why Prabhupada refers to this as going back to Godhead. Because he's referring to the fourth state of total annihilation or withdrawal of a material existence. So if material existence can be withdrawn in successive stages, the final stage is actually liberation. Therefore, you know, ultimately, another sense that he uses this term going back to Godhead is because at the end of Brahma's lifetime, all the living entities are actually wound up within the body of Mahavishnu. And then they are again, so they actually go back to the Supreme Person, but they again come back out. They get annihilated from Mahavishnu's perspective. as he's breathing in. Yes, Hare Krishna. As he's breathing in, yes, but we have to understand, you know, the duration of that breath. So in other words, this is called a Mahakalpa. It's one of the questions that Mahakalpa. Is the duration of creation during the breathing of Mahavishnu. So, as he breathes out, all the universes are created. Ours is described as one of the last, and one of the smallest. So if you imagine that within his one breath, all the universes come out, and then is one breath in, they all come back in. So that's a long breath. So therefore, in one sense, from his perspective, yes, they're all created and destroyed, but from the perspective of the living entities, you know, a whole lifetime of Brahma may go past between, you know, the first universe being destroyed and another universe being destroyed. You see, as he's breathing in, all the universes gradually long. Yeah. So some universes may, you know, therefore it's described, we see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, some universes are so big that the Brahmas have millions of heads. They're so big. And some are tiny, like ours, our brother's foreheads. Yes. A Mahakalpa.
And does that mean that it's also equal to 100 years of Brahma, because
the
Brahma is 100 years?
And if it's any later than all the No, because it actually winds up all the Brahmas. It winds up all the Brahmas. But that may take longer, you know. In other words, you know, even once out, the first universe to go back in, the unlucky one, could be us. Our Brahmas then merge into the body, but there's still universes out there within that breath. So time is still ticking, and then coming in. So a lot of time. They all come in within that breath. One day you meet him, he'll tell you.
Because you picture the juice, like they all come out from the pores of the body at the same time. One
presumes that we go at the same time when it begins. Yeah. No, it's a fact, but that breath is a long time. Right. So in other words, one universe, you know, has been withdrawn. That Brahma is now within the body of the Lord. But within the same breath, he's still breathing in, and there's billions of universes still to come. So, you know, after 3 or 4 billion universes have been wound up within his body, some Brahmas are still living. And they may have come out with the first breath, which means they've been living a lot longer than our Brahma. So, you know, by the time, you know, all the universes are wound up, is not necessarily, you can't pin it to the life of one particular Brahma. Because many, many Brahmas in succession, billions and billions until all the universes are wound up. I don't know if he knows how to play. That's how you play a didgeridoo. If Lord Vishnu knows how to play a didgeridoo, that may be possible. Because you actually, what you do is you're breathing out into the didgeridoo as you're breathing in through your nose. That's how you play a didgeridoo. But I don't know if he does that. I know he's a great yogi, Yogeshwara, but I think he just does the normal breath like that. But it is being done, not just through his mouth, it's through all the, you know, the body like that. Right. Verse number 6, we did. Winding up the creation, liberation from the subtle material existence. Yeah. Verse number 7. Where are we? Okay, now we get to Asraya, that the Supreme One who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul is the Supreme Source of the cosmic manifestation as well as its reservoir and winding up. So he's a source, it all comes from him. He's its reservoir, which means it rests upon him within his energy and it winds up within him. At all stages it's related to him. Prabhupada says in his purport, thus it is concluded by studying the complete Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Sri Krishna is the ultimate Samambhanam. Can I get you to call me back later? Thanks. Oh, it's my daughter, it's okay. Okay, so as you can see that now, if we say that the Supreme Lord, the person, God or Krishna, is the cause of everything, so immediately people would think, oh, you know, if people think of, if you say, who is God? God, you know, has two arms and two legs. He plays the flute. So we think of a person. When we think of a person, we find it very, very difficult to think of a person who, you know, universes are coming from that person, you know, and that person is, you know, maintaining universes. Very, very difficult to conceive of that, how, you know, one person can have such unlimited power. In fact, usually when we think of a person, we don't think of unlimited power. We don't think in terms of unlimited power. We just think of their individual power, and that unlimited power is spread out amongst many individuals and the material universe itself. But here we understand that this person, by his energies, he is doing all of these wonderful things by his energies. Therefore, if we hear that the Supreme Lord came into this universe and gave his association to some of his devotees, we would think that none of this is actually very impressive at all compared to that Supreme Person, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, is able to, you know, is kind enough to actually come into the material world and associate with us. You would think, gee, you know, what is all that compared to that? You know, that's the real wonder. That's the real amazing thing. Someone so unlimitedly powerful will come into the world and sit and, you know, have prasad, you know, sit with Arjun, and, you know, Arjun will slap him on the back and, you know, say that, oh, you know, you're, you know, speaking too much about yourself, your own glories, you know, and you might, Radharani, you know, will chastise Krishna, and you know, various Mother Yasoda will, you know, chase Krishna around with a stick. You know, Nanda Maharaj will give Krishna advice on, you know, how he should do things and what he shouldn't do, like that. So that's, but if we speak those things before understanding that that person is actually responsible for all of that, that is, then, you know, we would just think that that person is an ordinary person. And when we hear the pastimes of Krishna, even the various incarnations, we would think immediately, oh, well, they sound very ordinary. You know, he's infatuated with the opposite sex. You know, he's a bit naughty. He's not very religious at all times. You know, out of everyone, he's the only person. Basically, he's the only person in history that acted completely independently for his entire duration of life, not considering, not being, dependent or obliged to any other living entity, no demigod or no lord or anything. We see with the gopis. You know, the gopis loved Krishna and he just left. They cried for their entire duration of their life, and he just left. You see? Now, when you hear things like that, it's very hard to understand. But, you know, these different pastimes, all of the pastimes like that, Krishna is like that, that he just wasn't obliged to anyone, ever. Vishnu has to maintain the creation. Krishna doesn't have to do any of that. I think it's upstairs in the Prasadam hall. Yes.
So he
he's not obliged, but that's the wonder, that someone who's actually independent from anyone will act, you know, in such a way to voluntarily become obliged.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's not obliged to anyone. Not his friends, his lovers, his parents. He'll just walk out on all of them. He's not obliged to the demigods. Indra wanted to chastise him. He couldn't chastise. We're not obliged to Indra. He just lifted the Govardhan hill. I'm not obliged to Indra or any other demigod. Like that. If Brahma, you know, come and took his... I'm not obliged to you, Brahma. I'm not obliged to anyone. Shiva come to fight with him. I'm not obliged to... I'm fearful, I hit you with my yawning weapon, like this. In every, you know, there is no one who could actually make Krishna submit to them. He was complete, but he voluntarily submitted out of love. That's the wonder. That makes all of this look, you know, not very interesting at all. But the Bhagavatam goes through each of these different items to show that they are in fact done by a person. Someone is actually doing those things. And the scriptures are telling us who that person is. You know, if we look at all, you know, we looked at creation, sub-creation. If you look at it step by step, you can see one, you know, one element is creating the next, and the next. You can see, oh, I can see how this comes from this, from this, from this, like that. You know, it's not like waved a magic wand, everything was there. You know, these things are discussed element by element. You know, this element is there, produces that element. The combination of these produce the next. So, as you go through them, they're explained in such a way that, yes, you understand, oh, a person must do creation. And this is the very, just before you'll run out on me, the next couple of verses you'll see that this is how Sukadeva Goswami concludes. Ajatma, Adidevik, Adibaltik. That there are three different types of living entities in this material manifestation, and they're interdependent. You have the Adidevik, the demigods who control other living entities. The Adyatma, or the living entity with their particular subtle senses. And both of them are distinguished by having a material body, Adibaltik. The three of them are interdependent. So, for instance, the living entity, to see, he needs the adibaltik, the eyes. He has the sense of the subtle sense of sight. I want to see like this. He has that sense.